Technology, it's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun, it can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look at stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tungekar. The U.S. Department of Agriculture predicts the nation's farmers will deliver a record 3.4 billion bushels of soybeans this year. The USDA also says that this year, for the first time, Brazil will overtake the U.S. as the world's leading producer of soybeans. That means the pressure's on American soybean farmers to eke out even more soybeans from their fields. As Harvest Public Media's Abby Fentress-Swanson reports, scientists are promising big improvements now that they have a complete roadmap.
On a hot, breezy day in Thompson, Missouri, farmer Ron Flatt bends down in the middle of one of his soybean fields to pull up a plant by its roots. The roots look healthy. His son Brian shows me how to inspect the plant's leaves.
Any insect damage or grasshopper damage is the holes in the leaves. And then obviously you kind of got to look under the leaves for maybe smaller insects that might be beyond beans.
The plants look good today, but the Flats will continue to scout their fields two times a week until harvest in September.
It's all got to be healthy. And the healthier it is, the more yield we can get, which usually translated more money in our pocket, but more food in the consumer's mouth.
Yield is basically a farmer's output from his or her land. In the past several decades, there's been gradual improvement in soybean yields. Farmers now bring in almost 10 bushels an acre more than they did 30 years ago. But increased demand from China, along with competition from Brazil, are keeping scientists and farmers focused on how to maximize yields. And a recent breakthrough in soybean science may do just that.
I mean, it's amazing to see the explosion, I mean, that's gone on in the plant world.
Jeremy Schmutz is a plant genomicist at the Department of Energy's Joint Genome Institute in California. In 2010, his team completed a roadmap that shows every piece of soybean DNA. If you've heard of the sequence of the human genome, well, this is the sequence of the soybean genome.
And the human genome was really sequenced to be able to sort of raise the bar, make the data available to everybody who wanted to use it. And so really, from the plant side, we're essentially doing the same kind of thing, which is trying to accelerate and improve the resources that are available for people so that they can go in and do the kind of work that you're talking about today.
Work like what's being done at the University of Missouri by plant scientist Melissa Mitchum. Her research team used the soybean genome sequence to help uncover a previously unknown gene that's resistant to a microscopic worm that feeds on the roots of farmers' soybeans. She shows me this worm, called the soybean cyst nematode, in her greenhouse.
If you look closely, you should be able to diagnose this with soybean cyst nematode by observing these little round white balls here, which are the actual females.
Oh.
And those are the female cysts that protrude from the root.
Back in her office, Mitchum says that each year, this worm costs American farmers nearly $1 billion in lost yields.
This identification of soybean genes for resistance to soybean cyst nematode is sort of like one of the breakthroughs in the human disease field, you know, cloning a gene for Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. Okay, the only difference here, we're in soybean plant. But here we've cloned a gene that confers resistance to the major pathogen of soybean.
Other universities are making significant breakthroughs as well, and seed companies are developing new soybean cyst nematode-resistant varieties. Syngenta plans on putting a new one on the market in 2015, says Scott Erickson, who works in the company's soybean genetics division.
So we can unlock some of these possibilities that are available in the genetics of these crops we work with. We're essentially making better use of the land that's in production and reducing the demand on additional land, additional water, additional resources that might have to go into that crop.
Back in Thompson, Missouri, Ron Flatt says he and other soybean farmers are eager to see this research translate to their fields.
The technology is changing, and one of the reasons it has to is because of the world population and the demand for food, like down the road, it's increasing every day. And so we're going to have this increased production.
But maximizing soybean yields may need to happen sooner rather than later. New research from the University of Minnesota indicates that even the current growth in crop yields will be insufficient to feed the world by 2050. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Abby Fentress-Swanson.
And now we'll revisit a story about a rather unusual medical procedure, one that goes back thousands of years and now is also enjoying a resurgence. Michelle Skaliski filed this story earlier in June about how leeches are being used in modern medicine.
A large jar sits inside a refrigerator in the pharmacy at Mercy Springfield. Inside that jar are what are classified as medical devices by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, about 20 medical-grade leeches that are kept in case they're needed, which is usually once or twice a year. They're kept at about 43 degrees and don't expend much energy, allowing them to survive for long periods without food. Mercy pharmacist Terry Bark says they're used primarily in microsurgery, things like limb reattachments and plastic surgery.
The reason they're useful is that in those situations, it's easy enough to reestablish the arterial blood supply to the reattached appendage or what have you, but the venous blood vessels are, by comparison, very small, thin vessels, and it's hard to knit those back together.
He says leech saliva contains an anticoagulant to which their therapeutic effect can be attributed, but the saliva also contains proteins, including an anesthetic agent. That's a good thing since leeches' mouths contain three sharp blades. They feed for only about 20 minutes, during which time they take in about a tablespoon of blood and then drop off. A single procedure uses from 1 to 6 leeches. To thank them for their efforts, they're dropped into a solution of 70% alcohol and placed in a sharps container. According to Barks, leeches are never a first-line choice. They're used when first-line options have failed. The practice of using leeches in medicine goes back to the ancient Egyptians, he says, when they would be used for virtually everything.
Any ailment that entailed swelling and redness was considered to be due to an imbalance of one of the four humors, of which, you know, there's blood, phlegm, black bile, yellow bile. And so anything that involved redness or inflammation was considered to be an excess of blood. And so they would bloodlet, whether it be by leeches or some other mechanism.
They were thought then to be a cure-all. Today they're used much more discriminately. Bark's co-worker, fellow pharmacist Jackie Watkins, says the modern use of leeches goes back to around the mid-1980s. Mercy Springfield started using them 8 to 10 years ago. The leeches used at Mercy originate from Europe, and they're ordered from a supplier in New York at a cost of about $10 each.
We get them in overnight by air and change out their water immediately and get them set up in their leech locker that we have out in our inventory garage area.
Watkins says there can be a significant psychological side to leech therapy, so patient acceptance and family acceptance are major considerations. I'm Michelle Skaliski.
And that'll do it for this week's Under the Microscope. Thanks for listening. I'm Raymond Tongakar.